Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To find out more about who we are and to support the work that we're doing, go to neighborhood.love. Have a good and beautiful day, friends.
All right. Well, we are continuing our series. How do we turn that out right there? All right. Well, we got a banger of a message for you all today. We are continuing our series called Mantras. And since we've started this series, has anyone tried, and I'm not going to ask you what it is, I'm not going to ask you any personal questions, but has anyone tried using a mantra? I'm being serious. I know what I usually do, all right? And I'm like, cat farts? Yes. Cats don't bark. That's, yes. And it's not cat farts. That's, some people heard that. You're not the only one who heard that. Has anyone tried using a mantra every day? Okay, has anyone else tried using it since we started it? Okay, yeah, like I've been doing it more intentionally, and I've personally felt it's been a good reminder. Because mantras are not magic tricks. That's like the hardest, not the hardest. It's an obstacle of thinking like, oh, I just have to say, I said this last week, like, well, we don't do it anymore. And then I magically will never want to do the things I used to do anymore, right? It doesn't work that way. It's meant to be. Imagine like stacking like really thin pieces of paper on top of each other. It's like you just keep doing the same motion over and over again. It builds slowly off of it to build something more substantial. So when I say good and beautiful, because in that moment I feel like I am missing out on something, or I feel shame, or I feel guilt, and therefore I feel like that should define who I am instead of that there's inherent goodness inside of me. It's like a touch point. I have to remind myself so I can be who I feel like I'm becoming on purpose, instead of letting that negative energy or that shame continue to compound and to win, or not win, but to influence me more than I want. I want to live a good and beautiful life, and I need to remind myself, because it's really easy to compromise that. And so last week we talked on, what did we talk about last week? Talked on be still and know that I'm God from Psalm 46. And that idea of be still isn't just about a lack of motion. It's this this Hebrew word of the still means to loosen your grip on the things that bring you security, like a weapon, of something that makes you feel strong. It's a way to like let it go, create room for something to be moved out or something to be moved in. But we don't need to have that security in order to be good. And today, this is so good. We're talking about benevolent universe. And this is a phrase I've used over the past year. This has been like my mantra for 2026, maybe a little bit longer, but it's a word I use often. I use it this morning. I woke up, I had some feels, and I had to, like, as I was driving here, like, say out loud the things I feel like either I'm missing or the things that are outside of my control, let's say that. And I was having a lot of feels about it, and then I'm like, you know what, I'm not defined by what I did or what I didn't do, what happened or didn't happen, because there's nothing but a benevolent universe, which is a really good thing to say when I can smile in front of everyone else, right? And not like break down, because there's times where I don't feel like it's a benevolent universe. But I have to choose to believe that there is nothing but like beauty and love and opportunity for me. Because I'm 45 and I have not had a midlife crisis. Right, let the record show. At least, I don't think I have. I'm looking at, my wife is here today. She's like, let me tell you about a crisis. I've not had a midlife crisis, but I get it, right? It's like I understand why, and I can speak for the men. I understand why men in like their 40s or 50s want to go buy a sports car, or they feel the need to go and find a new partner, find something exciting. They want to like look young again, because there's something that says by this age, whatever age, and this is not unique to just men, but there's something inside of us that says by this age, you should have accomplished, you should be, you should have, you should have learned, that one especially, right? I should learn this by now. I should have obtained, I should have with me, I should have in my bank account, whatever it might be that we think is some sort of standard. I get, because you can't have it all. And when you let other things or other people or other ideas or other systems define your success, you might panic, Because I can look back at the first half of my life. I'm old enough now to look at halves. And I'm like, I feel like I'm the richest person in the world. And I really mean that. But then I can slip into this of like, well, I don't have that. Like, I remember in my 30s when I saw, this is going to be for local people, but Duluth News Tribune, those are called, anyone who's under 25, that's a newspaper, all right? That's what it used to be. And they would release this this feature, and it would be the 40 under 40. Anyone know what I'm talking about, right? And I remember being like 32, 33, and I'm like, oh, man, they must have lost my number, right? That's, they probably couldn't figure out how to spell my name correctly, so that's why they didn't call me, right? And I really thought, like, oh, I'm going to get there. And somewhere, I never, like, said it out loud, but in my head, I'm like, oh, I'll be in that article. And then when I was 40 and I saw it come out, I'm like, they still lost my number. I've sent it to them a lot of times, right? But there was, like, this feeling of, like, I would be, quote-unquote, somebody, right? And then when I wasn't somebody, I'm like, am I a nobody? Huh. That is a feeling that it's easy to have. I have someone in my life that would use this description of being like on a dock. And you look around the lake and you see all the other people get on these ships on the docks. And some docks have like multiple boats. They even have like big boats and like smaller boats and canoes. And they can choose between them and they can go to their destination. What this person was describing, like, am I the only one on the dock and all the boats have left? I've missed the boat. I've missed my shot. I've missed my opportunity. So all I have, all I'm entitled to, all I can expect is right here, which is a very common feeling from talking to people, because you think I should be something and now I don't have access to it. I cannot obtain it anymore. It's gone forever. I have to just settle. I have to settle for this kind of life, this kind of energy, this kind of friendship, this kind of love. I'm only worth this. It's a really easy lie to fall into. Luckily for us, this Bible that is kind of a big deal in the Christian faith, right? And with the Bible comes a lot of different feelings, as it should, because it's messy, it's complicated, it's beautiful, it's been used forever to oppress people, and it's also been a tool to help liberate people. Right? So it's messy. I get it. But the Bible speaks a lot to this condition. Like, a lot. Jesus says in Matthew 5, don't worry about tomorrow. Like, today has enough to worry about. Jesus talks about this parable of this vineyard owner, and he needs help, so he hires out all these people, and the people he goes to first, he says, I'm going to pay you this wage, and the people are like, that is so incredibly generous. Wow, thank you, vineyard owner. And then throughout the day, he offers the same amount of money for people who work 8 hours, 4 hours, and even under 1 hour. They all get paid the same, and the people who work the longest are like, hey, not a big fan of this. We should be getting paid more. And the vineyard owner says, you thought I was really generous. What's changed? And there's this podcaster, an author, who was giving a commentary on this parable. And he said, it's almost like the vineyard owner was looking at the people that he hired that they thought he was so generous and saying, what's changed? What changed from the time that I offered you this incredibly generous wage, well over and above what is usually paid, and now other people also got in on that same benevolence. They got in on that same generosity, and now it's a threat to you. And it's almost like, do you think that there's only a limited amount of resources? Is there only a limited amount? And if someone takes from that, even though you already got yours, do you still feel like the future money you're going to get, the future love, the future worth, the future value that you feel like should be yours is being taken by someone else, and that feels like a threat to you? And the line they use that stuck with me is like, he said, it's like, how do you divide infinity? That stuck with me. The vineyard owner's like, I have more than enough. You have more than enough. How do you divide up infinity? Because there's nothing but benevolence. And this has stuck with me. And I imagine I'm not the only one. This idea of, did I miss my shot? There's some regrets that I had, or the things that I feel like are owed to me or entitled to me, even the idea of somebody else getting it, does it take away from my own? Right? Jesus speaks to this specifically. The Christian church, you know, we've done some good things. We've done some horrible things, right? But the church has never done this. See, in Luke 15, Jesus is having some food and some drinks with some buddies. And there's this religious group of people. We'll call them the beautiful people, like the insiders, right? They're the ones who know the ins and outs. They're the ones who've put in the work, honestly. They have done a lot of good things. They understand. And they believe, I've done X, Y, and Z, therefore I deserve X, Y, and Z. Jesus shows up on the scene and says, that's great. High fives, big fans of all that. But I'm also going to include these people. And the beautiful people are like, whoa, Jesus. Hold on. You can't sit at a table with those kind of people because it's going to compromise what we've done. If we include these people, Jesus, that's a slippery slope, because then who else are you going to let in? If we call this good, if we call this sacred, who else? And they use language very much of like, if we include generosity or believability or love to these people, is it taking away from my own believability, inclusion, and love as well? Church has never done this, right? Like, my brother and I just yesterday had a long conversation on why is climate change, and I'm going a very different direction, but stick with me. Why is climate change to conservative Christians such a big deal? Because I listen to more than I'll ever be honest about Christian talk radio, all right? And it comes up often. And they can't stand any kind of climate change policies. And it finally just, I'm so used to it. I'm like, Dano, why? Why do they care? What is the threat that the earth might be warming? How does that compromise the gospel or their view of God or who God is? And we're like, it's power? Being right? Right? Like, that's the only thing I could think of. And it's this idea of, if we say that this is all it can be and other people have opposing views, somehow that's a threat to our view. Instead of like, yeah, the earth is getting warmer, God is still good, whatever they believe. Why does opposing things always mean it's a threat to us? Let me say something about men, right? Men have been opposed to feminism for quite a long time, right? And one thing I've learned from my wife, she has a mug. It just says, feminism is for everyone. Yo. It doesn't say yo. It says something else, right? But I'm saying yo because it sounds better. So feminism is for everyone. The idea of feminism isn't then men are evil and bad and we have to move them to a ditch. Maybe that's an option, right? But it's also of like, what if we make it equitable for everybody? Because feminism is good for everybody. Men can't hear that, right? Men can't hear that because somehow if there's believability, it's a threat to their own believability. Does that make sense? So at this table, Jesus is having this meal, and having a meal with people is a very intimate thing in this culture. So by Jesus having a meal and sharing drinks, he is saying these people are included. And this group of people says, Jesus, we're going to murder you for this. And they end up doing it. But to counteract that, Jesus tells three stories because all good stories come in threes, right? And he tells a story. First, it's for the shepherd. A shepherd loses a sheep, and he leaves the 99. He goes, finds the one, and the shepherd brings it back, and they have a big party because that's what you do when you lose a sheep, apparently, right? Then it goes to another story, and it's this woman, and she lost this coin. The coin is more than a quarter. This is like for many days worth of wages. This is going to feed and sustain you for more than just a meal. So she needs to find this. She finds the coin, and she does what? Throws a party, a celebration, because, hey, I get to eat again. So shepherd, sheep, party. Woman, coin, party. Then there is the prodigal son comes right after it and tells the story of the son goes to his rich father and says, Father, you're dead to me. You're only worth a dollar amount. Give it to me now. The father says, that sounds like a great idea. Gives him the money. Son goes down to, where do people go to spend all their money? Cromwell. They go to Cromwell, all right? He goes to Cromwell, and he's buying lotto tickets at the gas station, buying pizza by the slice, and whatever else you can do in Cromwell, all right? And blows it all and is with nothing, has no food, and he's eating out of the troughs with the pigs, and he has this idea, my father's servants eat better than this. So he picks himself up. He's moving back towards his father's house, and he's practicing this line, "I have sinned against you. I'm a horrible person. Please, Dad, will you let me be a servant?" Before he can get out of his mouth, Dad comes up, throws the jacket around him, gives him the family ring, has a huge party, right? Because what was lost is now is found. So there's a theme. A lamb is lost and is found. A coin is lost and is found. Now the son is lost and is found, all in three different ways. But they're all found. They all come home in three different forms. And the same reaction to all of them is a celebration. So like there's a way of thinking here of there is no ledger. There is no like scoreboard. There's no tally on the wall where God is saying, well, you've kind of done a little too much. Now you're gone, right? It is this benevolent universe, Jesus saying, however people return, there's always going to be a celebration. And he's speaking to the religious insider saying, Jesus, you can't hang out with these people. But on this story, Jesus goes a little bit further, and this is where we're going to land for a little bit. Jesus tells a story of they're having the party, and the dad realizes that as everyone's hanging out, having a good time, celebrating the son coming home, his son's other son, the brother of the prodigal son, is inside folding laundry, as probably the eldest kid usually does. You guys go celebrate. I'll take care of everything because you're not being responsible. So he's inside doing chores. Dad comes in and says, hey, what are you doing? The party's outside. You can hear the music. And the son says, I have done everything right. My brother insulted us, brought shame to us for all time. I'm the one down at Harold's having coffee, hearing the stories, telling me of what my brother did. I'm at the grocery store. I'm at the gas station. I'm down at L&M. I'm the one who has to answer for it. I'm the one who hears the snickers. I hear the one mocking us. So, like, I did it right. And you've never killed the fat. You never had the big party. You never gave me the ring. You never gave me the robe, right? This is a legitimate concern. This is a legitimate problem. Like, I feel very validated in this because what he's saying is you're spending all this money and energy. You've already spent all this money, and he wasted it all, and you were still celebrating him? What about me? What about me? Like, you're even spending more money that we don't have. He's kind of saying he's feeling threatened by you doing all these beautiful things for my brother is taking away from me, and I'm the one who did it right. And what the father responds to the son is the point that Jesus is trying to make to everybody, not just the religious insiders. It's like he's grabbing them by the face, and he's like, hear this. And he says, everything I have is yours, and I am with you always. That is the father's response to the son that felt like I did everything right. He's panicking. Imagine he's frantic. Imagine he's full of anxiety. He's probably full of anger because he's trying to justify his love and his worth. And the dad says the same thing to both sons. It's the same answer. Two wildly different actions. Same benevolent universe response. Everything I have is already yours. There is nothing in this whole property, in this whole house, in my whole being, my whole existence. There's nothing on every acre of this land that does not already belong to you. It is within your grasp. It is within you. It's right there. You just haven't realized it yet. And I'm with you always. If you're eating out of the trough, if you're over at Cromwell, or you're folding laundry, or you're taking a nap, I am with you always. What Jesus is telling to the religious insiders, as well as the people who are being judged by those religious insiders, is the same thing. All of it belongs. And you can feel like you're being robbed. You can feel like you're missing out. You can feel like there's some sort of compromise. That's a very normal feeling. You could feel like you're standing on the dock and you've missed your opportunity for love, pleasure, professional, like your retirement. You know how many pastors I've talked to who didn't save for retirement? I wasn't planning on saying this, so I chuckle. But they really believed that Jesus was going to come back before they died, before they retired. So they didn't save one nickel in retirement. And I remember like hearing that, I'm like, what is wrong with you? I didn't start like, what's wrong with me? And did I read the Bible wrong? Maybe it was like I had some judgment. And I think that's unwise, but there's still a benevolent universe. It's gonna be a lot harder to retire, but does not mean you've missed the boat on a good and beautiful life. All these things that we think this is how success is, this is what it means to be beautiful, or whatever it might be, this is what sacredness or holiness, this is how you be a good husband or father or mother or daughter or son. We have all these things we build up as this is the right way. And Jesus is saying, that is good. That can be positive. But everything I have is yours. And I'm with you always. So this mantra of a benevolent universe comes from the wisdom of Jesus, of telling what I imagine, what I envision is me, is God saying, as I'm stressed about whatever. This morning I had some feelings of some things that have happened in my life, and it felt like I was robbed for like a little bit. This morning I'm like, oh, I think I missed it. And I'm like, oh, I'm actually preaching about this. What a great time to have this memory, right? Of like, I had to pause, have my feelings, and say out loud in my car of, there's nothing but a benevolent universe. And just because I might have missed something, I didn't have the opportunity of this, or in some of these things have been taken away from me, I can grieve that. I can have pain and death and grief. But it doesn't mean I haven't missed out on love and joy presently and whatever's in the future. So I say this to, first of all, to fathers, that fatherhood, parenting, being responsible for other people in any capacity, if it's your children or not, there's a responsibility, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful, and it's heavy. And there's things that you want or you dream for yourself and the people you love. And you can't bat 1,000, right? I've learned that. I cannot provide everything for my kids. I want to. I wish I could, but I can't. And I used to feel that as a disappointment. Now I look at it as like, all I can do is pass on love. All I can do is pass on that value of money over everything. All I can do is be present. All I can do is do my best. And I can trust that's enough, because my kids haven't missed the boat. I haven't missed the boat. The boat might leave and might come back. I might have to walk to a different dock. I might have to walk to a totally different body of water, and that's okay. I can do hard things, right? I've done hard things in my life, and I want to teach my kids. I want to teach the people at neighborhood, the people around me, the people I love. Everything that God has is ours. And she's with us always. And if we really believe that, like a mantra, like I said, is meant to a touch point to go back. If I really believe that, how would it change how I show up in a room? How would it, as I'm dreaming about like retirement, right? As I'm dreaming about the next second half of my professional life, if I really believe that there's nothing but good and beautiful things for me. There's a benevolent universe, and everything God has for me is already here. It might influence my starting point. It might impact how I show up. So to all of you, maybe you're somewhere in that story of being on the dock, walking to the dock, or maybe you're in like the second half, last third, last eighth, right? The first half of your life, you might be feeling this. My encouragement to you is that everything that you need is all around you. And God is with us always. Let's pray. So God, we thank you for being incredibly good. And thank you for the wisdom. I feel like a couple 13, 14 times you say throughout the Bible the same thing over and over and over again. There's a benevolent universe. There's nothing but a good and beautiful God that wants good and beautiful things for us. So I pray for us, those of us who feel loss. Maybe they're feeling the loss of their dad, loss of a kid, a loss of a role model. And for those of us who are grieving, maybe for a moment or maybe for a longer, of missed opportunities. And as we grieve that is real, that is valid. But I pray, God, that we will not live there, that will not define us, that will not end. But as you said to the Son, everything I have is yours. I'm with you always. May we take that with us, God. And may it move from a mantra of this benevolent universe, and may it move into like our calendars, into our jokes, into our ethics, into our values, into how we show up in a room, that we can offer that generosity and that benevolence everywhere we go. So use us, God, to bring love and joy and hope. And we love you. Amen. Amen. All right. That was fun. Well, thank you. It's a lot more fun having the microphone. thank you for spending your morning with us. I hope you have a great Father's Day and enjoy the rest of your weekend.